Welcome to The Scoop, an informational podcast for graduate students in the College of Music at Michigan State University. My name is Susan Hoekstra, graduate advisor and your host. For first-year DMA students in the College of Music, today's podcast on guidance committee should be most helpful. Joining me are associate professors Michael Callahan and Ken Prouty. Welcome and thanks for being here.
Hi, Susan.
Thanks for having
me. MSU's College of Music, you know, we're kind of unique and it offers many ways for students to get guidance. Obviously, students will get musical guidance from their private teachers and ensemble directors. Faculty will give them guidance during courses. They can get career planning guidance from Christine Beamer. And as graduate advisor, I help students with their academic plan. But in addition, DMA students have a guidance committee to assist them. Each graduate student admitted to a doctoral program has the responsibility to form this guidance committee. The discussion today is primarily for students in the DMA program in conducting and performance. Although many of the topics we discuss may apply, students in the PhD in music education have a different procedure. Also, the DMA and composition report will vary depending on coursework and career goals. So some of the things we're going to cover are the role of the guidance committee, how a student assembles their committee, the procedure for filling out the form and deadlines, the significance of the report, and the procedure for changing members of the committee. So the guidance committee provides support to you in following ways. One, it assists you with deciding on what coursework to take. It gives you advice regarding the different ways you would like to defend. There are three different ways you can defend. You can write a document, you can do a smaller document plus a lecture recital, or you can do two lecture recitals. They also give you feedback on topics and content of documents and lecture recitals and provide insight into preparation. This committee is who you will defend to. So let's talk a little bit more about assembling the committee. The committee consists of a minimum of four individuals. Typically, it's your applied professor, and then you ask for another professor from your area or an appropriate ensemble, if you're a conductor, for instance, a musicology professor, and a theory professor. So in regards to musicology, Ken, what is the best way for a student to ask a musicology professor to be on their committee?
This podcast was originally taped when Professor Prouty was area chair for musicology. The information still applies, with the exception of one aspect. Professor Bartik is now the area chair. He has asked that you go ahead and talk directly to a musicology professor you would like to ask to be on your committee. Typically, students select a professor they have had a class with. However, if students who have not yet taken a musicology course have questions, they are encouraged to contact the area chair.
I would say in musicology, there are a couple of different things that you want to consider. If you are already enrolled in musicology coursework, if you've taken a seminar in the previous fall semester, or you are currently enrolled in a musicology seminar during the spring semester when your committee report is coming due, you might be inclined to approach that professor and ask if they would be on the committee. And that would certainly be appropriate. If you have certain research interests or certain interests in terms of repertoire, you might be inclined to ask a committee member whose research interests intersect with those. For example, I do jazz and American music, so I tend to sit on committees a lot that go with those particular topics. My colleague, Dr. Bartik, for example, will oftentimes be on committees where people are doing pieces by Russian composers because that's his research background. One thing, however, that students always want to keep in mind is that one faculty member cannot be on every committee. And there are going to be situations when a faculty member might be somewhat overextended in terms of committee membership, where a faculty member simply may not be available. We try to accommodate people as best we can, but it should be understood that in some cases a person's first choice of committee member may not be available to sit on that committee. If I'm thinking about the best way for this to play out, one of the things that I'm really going to strongly suggest is that students cultivate relationships with faculty members right from day one. Even if you're not in coursework, there's absolutely nothing wrong, and I say this in the graduate orientation every time, there's absolutely nothing wrong with just stopping by someone's office and introducing yourself, or just kind of chatting in the hallway, what kinds of things are you interested in. We want to know who you are. And those kinds of informal conversations that you have, I think particularly in that first semester, are going to be very important for developing these kinds of relationships that may pay off down the road in terms of not just getting your report in, but actually structuring your research and career goals and so on and so forth. So I think that is maybe the most important thing that anybody can do, is just understand that all the faculty are here for you. Start to build those relationships very early.
And they get a chance to know what their specialties are.
Sure.
In more detail.
Yeah, absolutely.
And who would be a better fit for their committee.
Right. Yeah.
Michael, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Just to echo what Ken said, I think the best practice for a student who's looking to find a committee member from theory would be to contact the area chair. My email is MRC. And what I can do is find out from you what your interests are, if you know what you might want to do your lecture recital or document on. I'll also keep track of which theory faculty members still have room in their advising portfolio. And chances are you'll have taken by that point at least one theory course, so you may know someone. Just again to echo what Dr. Prouty said, it may not be possible for that faculty member whom you already know to serve on your committee. It might be that that person's already got enough or too many DMA advisees. But we'll try. What I'll do is work with you to try to recommend a faculty member whose interests match yours and who is still able to accommodate additional people. And just likewise to underscore, it would be really great to know more DMA students before the February and March season for advising comes around. So don't feel that you have to remain a stranger until that point.
Good point. Now, all of this we're talking about is because there's a deadline at the end of March that you have to submit what we call a guidance committee report. So this is why we're talking about this. And this guidance committee report will include those individuals who are in your guidance committee. And then it will also include the coursework that you're taking, that which you just discussed. And this report is like a contract in the sense that when I go to certify your degree, I look at this report to make sure that you have taken the courses that are on your guidance committee report. So it's important that you really be thoughtful in what classes you take. Plan ahead. So there's lots of ways we're going to do it. We're going to talk about that in a little more detail. But as far as musicology coursework, what they have to take two musicology courses.
That's correct.
And then Music 830. So can you tell us what should be included on this report?
So just to clarify, the two musicology courses that doctoral students have to take must be at the 800 or 900 level. I stress this because we also offer a series of courses at the 400 level that have an accompanying 892A section. We call that like an add-on or a mini seminar. Master's students take those courses for musicology credit. Doctoral students can take those courses for elective credit, but they cannot be counted for the two musicology course requirements. Those have to be three credit standalone courses. Most of those are going to be at the 900 level, but there are a couple of classes that are offered at the 800 level, such as, like, for example, my Music 810 Jazz History class. That would count as a DMA course. So those classes will need to be indicated whether you have taken them, are currently enrolled, or whether you plan to take coursework. And as far as what you plan to take, that's something that you will talk about with the individual faculty member in terms of what's available, what fits in with what you're doing, and so on and so forth.
So let's say a student is already enrolled this fall or spring in a musicology course. They put that what they've taken on that report.
Yeah, you would put that on there and the semester in which you took it.
Right.
So that's one part of it. Now the other part of this is Music 830, the research methods class. And I guess this is probably a good time for me to talk about waivers.
Right.
And I know you've probably heard this a lot before, but just to reiterate, if you have taken a research methods class at another university as part of your master's coursework, or in some cases as part of doctoral coursework if you're transferring in, you can apply to have the requirement for Music 830 waived. And in order to do that, you need to send the area chair of musicology, which for the moment is me, a transcript showing the grade that you received in the class, which has to be a 3.0 equivalent or higher, that's generally a B, and also a syllabus from the class in the semester in which you are enrolled. And then it will be reviewed, and usually we ask for at least about 2 weeks of lead time in order to review things and get back to you with a decision. So keep that two-week deadline in mind, because that's going to become a thing in just a moment. as part of your graduate committee report, Music 830 is one of the classes that has to be listed. So if you haven't taken a research methods course before, you will look at the next year's schedule. If you haven't already taken it, if you have taken it, obviously you just put it on your form in the semester in which you took it. But if you have to still take it, you know, you look at the schedule. It's offered every fall and spring, and you can see which one fits best into your schedule and sort of put it on your guidance committee report. If you are requesting a waiver, you will also indicate this on your guidance committee report. Now, here's the thing that's really important for you to clue in on. This means that you must apply for the waiver of Music 830 before your guidance committee report is due.
And that's the end of March.
So, if you intend to apply for a waiver for Music 830, you need to submit that to me by the middle of March at the absolute latest. And I'm talking the middle of March of your first year.
And keep in mind, you know, spring break is included in there, folks.
I would actually say, just to be safe, I would say get it submitted by the beginning of March. And that would give you a little bit more time in case there are things that have to be worked out. And then you submit the materials, assuming that everything's okay, I can sign off on a waiver. And then you can indicate that on your guidance committee report that you have received a waiver for Music 830. Right. If you do not do this, if you do not submit your Music 830 waiver request in time for it to be committed, to be indicated on your guidance committee report, you may not receive a waiver for the class, even if you've taken one. I cannot stress this enough, that it is important for you to get the waiver requests in as soon as possible. But at any rate, please get them in by the beginning of March, because if you don't do that, you potentially risk having to take the class even if you've taken one before.
Correct. So there's two musicology courses that will have to be included on the committee report, and then whatever status Music 830 has.
Yeah, and then Music 830, whether you have taken it / will be taking it, or whether it's waived.
And then let's talk about theory. Our theory requirements are that you have to take at least 3 theory classes, unless you did your master's degree here. If you did your master's degree here, you can do 2.
Right.
So if obviously that means every report is unique as you all are. And so tell us a little bit about what you want them to look for as far as putting theory coursework.
Yeah, exactly. They are unique because I think all of the theory faculty look forward to these conversations. We can find out a little bit about what repertoire you tend to be invested in as a performer, or what your interests are. There's a pretty wide variety of courses, and every member of the theory faculty will know a summary of what those courses will entail. So once you get together with whichever theorist will be on your committee, they can give you a quick rundown of what all of the choices are and help you to figure out which ones are in which semesters. It used to be that we had a smaller variety of classes, and so most DMA students took the same classes, but that's different now, and so it's very likely you'll have a different selection from other people in your studio.
And that allows you to develop what interests and background you have, and that's why everyone's reports might look a little different based on what classes they take.
Yeah, and just one other thing on this. I think the best cases are where a student comes into one of these advising meetings with some sense either of what they might want to work on down the road for a lecture, recital, or document, and therefore some particular course might be especially helpful for that. Or even better, if they have an idea of sort of career plans beyond just the most general, and know, for example, that it would be particularly useful to build skills that one of these classes works on. I mean, it's great when we can have that as part of the conversation instead of just sort of picking out of a hat 3 classes.
Exactly. And then there's the elective courses. Typically, you have to take 6 electives. Piano students are a little different. They do have to take Music 849, which is a piano performance class, and then they also have to take chamber music. So electives are something that you can talk with me about for sure. I can give you a list of different things, and these can be other theory or history courses, including, like, if they want to take for an elective a 400 level.
Right.
History course.
Right.
However, electives, you know, I encourage students to be thoughtful about what those are going to be, because this is where you can use this time to develop yourself professionally. There's lots of different things we can talk about. So let's just talk about a little bit of a timeline. I'm kind of going a little bit from our script a little bit, just because I want to say I encourage students to come and see me the end of January, early February. This would be an ideal scenario. Come and talk to me. We'll talk about the courses you've already talked about. I can give you a feel for what's going to be offered next year and when, because we don't always know when these things are happening. But we'll have a better feel for next year and some of your goals. And then the next step after that to fill out your report would be to go and talk to the individual chairs in each area for musicology and for theory. But you also have to get your applied instructor to sign your form and also this other person from the other area. So for instance, this other person, let's say you're a flute player. Obviously, Professor Sherman's going to be your head of your committee, and then maybe you ask for somebody else in the woodwind area, like Professor Yehuda or whoever, you know. That's where you want to take care of that. Now, that's the procedure, okay? And it's strongly recommended, again, that you kind of think of this ahead of time. The member of the committee, okay, when you take this, what happens is this sequence of events, you go to the person that you want to ask to be on your committee, okay? Then you should have some list of courses that you're interested in taking and have a conversation, and that may change, it may not change. Okay, once you have that discussion, then have the member of that committee form sign the form after that discussions and write it in pen on the form. Okay, so then that's it. There's not a change at this point. And committee members shouldn't never sign a form that is blank in their area.
Yeah.
So if you're talking to your history professor and you're talking about histories, if your theory isn't on the form, that's okay. They can sign the history portion.
Yeah.
But they need to, you know, it needs not to be blank before you put those courses down. Any other comments on the procedure that you have?
I will add one thing in the interest of here's what you don't do.
Sounds
so
good.
Come at this from the other way. Do not show up to a faculty member's office with a form and ask them to sign it. Because if you just knock on someone's door and say, will you sign my committee form, the answer will be no. And then it will be followed by an awkward silence just like that last one.
Good job.
Yeah, this is not what you do. You need to talk to people. You need to, as I said, build these relationships. Have an idea of what it is that you want to do when you go into this meeting. And that is just something I cannot stress that enough.
Just generally that this process is a lot healthier when it's not at the last minute.
Yeah.
Because it permits real conversations about your interests.
I think that's a lesson for life.
You know,
yes,
absolutely. I mean, it is so stressful to try to jump through these hoops at the last, you know, on the last day before your account is held. So just please be proactive and allow this process to work for you in the way that it's designed to work for you.
And first of all, maybe they listen to the podcast first, and then they start the process.
Let me say one other thing. Because the deadline for this is sort of tied to registration, in that you have to have your committee report in before you can register for the next year, you know, be prepared in terms of coursework with a plan B. Because a lot of times the course that you want to take, you have this particular class, it's offered in the fall, you want to take it, you go to register, let's say it's the second day that registration's open, you go to register, and it's full.
Yeah.
Right? And that happens a lot.
Especially in the musicology area.
And so can I talk about, especially in musicology. Let me just talk about this, because, you know, courses are capped. We can't have everybody in every class. And musicology seminars, for example, generally are not allowed to go over 20 students. Because when you go over 20, it really becomes a very difficult environment in which to really do a seminar. So if that happens, you know, you always have the option of having your name put on a wait list that's kept in the graduate office, but that's not a guarantee that you're getting into the class. So one of the things I guess I can tell you in the realm of things not to do, one sort of attitude that I would correct is, I have to take this class. Right, this is a class in terms of musicology, no DMA student is required to take any particular musicology seminar. It's pretty open. So you may find yourself in a situation where you don't get your first choice class and you have to have something else that maybe you wouldn't have thought of before. So it's important to think about that as well. What do I do if this class is closed, or what are my other options? Mm-hmm. So that's something I think that's really, really important. Now, All of this, of course, is yet another reason that we say don't wait till the last second.
Exactly.
Get the stuff in on time. Even get it in before on time.
Absolutely.
Because if you wait until after the deadline and you've got a hold, you're almost assured that you will not get into the classes.
The deadline to submit the form, completed form, okay, yeah. Not some of it and not including the waivers, including the classwork, completing all the signatures,
is Thursday, March 26th, 2020. That's Thursday, March 26th, 2020. If we don't have your completed form by Thursday, March 26th, a hold will be put on your account, which keeps you from registering.
Most registration starts taking place in April for next year.
Right.
If you get in the hopper in April, there's a real good chance you're going to get what you want. Okay?
Yep.
But not always, but it's a much better chance that you're going to get what you want if you register in April. So that's why we're saying back it up. Back it up. Start thinking about this in January. Start assembling your committee in January and February. Get your waiver out of the way if you're going to do that. Then in March, then you're all set, and then you're going to be ready, guess what, to register for classes.
Yeah.
Again, I can't reiterate how many times students aren't aware when classes, you can register for classes, and it's April, okay?
Yeah.
The class coursework will be online in March.
Right. Just to reiterate again, it takes time for this process to play out. From when you first have these initial advising meetings to when you start talking with committee members to when you actually submit the form, you need to allow time for this to play out. If the deadline is the 29th and it's the 27th and you say, oh, I have 2 days to do this, you're not going to get it done in time.
Mm-hmm.
It is not enough time. You need, this is weeks long process.
Absolutely.
Of getting these things and maybe even if we factor advising meetings into it, a months long process. And I think the advice to get on this basically first thing in the spring semester. You come back after having gone on holiday somewhere and now you're back, and that should be one of your first thoughts is, oh, I've got to get my committee together this semester. I'm going to start this right now.
And we don't have you do this the first semester because we want to get you acclimated.
Right.
We want you to understand and get to know some of your colleagues as well as your professors so that you know who you might want to have on your committee. Again, that's why you said get to know us. Come and stop by and say hi, that kind of thing if you haven't had a course work with them yet.
And also in the first semester, we sometimes don't know exactly what the course rotation is going to be. We're still we get this schedules together in October.
Exactly.
So we kind of sometimes can't tell you exactly what's going to happen. But generally by January, the schedule, it may not be up and available online yet, but we'll know.
Right. And I'll know.
And you'll know too. Yeah.
Now, keeping that, just to add to that, the summer schedule.
Right.
There are some courses in the summer that the DMA students may want to take if they're here in the summer.
Yes.
Including theory and musicology.
Yes.
So those courses are usually put online in February,
mm-hmm.
and you can enroll in them in March. But
right.
don't get confused. That's for the summer. For the summer, they're online in March, and then you can register in April.
Yeah. And speaking from musicology, those summer courses do count towards the musicology requirement.
Right.
They are 800 level, 3-credit courses. They do count for DMA.
And then we have 2 theory classes.
Yeah.
Three that will count. For that music, 872, 875, and 867.
Yeah. Right. But 867 doesn't have its own comprehensive question, but it can be used, and there's a course that's similar to it.
Yeah.
So.
And those summer courses also tend to fill very quickly.
Right. So again, you want to apply for summer courses in March.
Yeah.
So this is why we're backing up to January.
Yeah.
I hope everyone's hearing that.
Yeah.
So they get their guidance committee report. They have all, they really know what they're going to do. They've done everything. They've got the report. And then sometime down the line, something happens and they have to switch their schedule. Or a committee member is going to be on sabbatical the semester that they're going to defend. What do they do now?
It really is not a huge problem to substitute a course. I mean, as we've been saying, sometimes a course is full or your interests change. It just requires the approval of everybody on the committee.
Right.
And so, you know, provided it's a course that fills the same role, you know, a different theory course in place of the first one, it's fine.
Yeah.
So you can just send an email to your committee members saying, I would like to make this substitution. Does everybody approve? And then that email is sent to our graduate studies office, and then we change your guidance criteria.
And if I can just make one suggestion when students do that, if that does happen, send one email to all of the relevant parties, right? So send one email and include all the committee members, include Susan, include Am at the MUS grad email address, and everybody can just respond reply all, so that these all sort of come in rather than sending one
trickles of emails
over here and one over here.
Thank you, thank you. I appreciate that comment very well.
And it works a lot better on our end too. Just to kind of use that as a springboard. It's really easy to switch a course, again, because sometimes they're full and you have to do that. But also switching committee members. Sometimes, again, if somebody's on sabbatical, or if, as happens sometimes, if somebody hasn't taken a class, and let's say it's fall semester of your second year and you take a musicology seminar and you say, wow, this is stuff I'm really interested in. I wonder if this person would be able to be on my committee. It's generally not difficult at all to switch committee members. And again, the procedure would basically be the same, that you would send an email to all the relevant people and you would include the potential new committee member and just say, I'd like to make a switch here. Would this be okay? Now, I want to stress before you do that, that you have a meeting with the current, let's say it's in musicology, the current musicology faculty member, just say, hey, I'm taking this class with this person. I think this would be a great research thing. Would you be okay with me switching? 99.999 times out of 100, the answer is going to be, yeah, that sounds fine. I can't think of ever encountering an example where that's been an issue, where somebody said, no, I really want to be on your committee, and to deny that. But again, procedure-wise, it's the same. But just as a courtesy to the person who's on your committee right now, it's really important to consult with that person first, just to kind of let them know what's going on.
One other case when this happens, and I'm sure it's nobody who's listening to this podcast who are all going to complete your degrees in a timely manner, but if you've been here a while and your committee member retires, that's the case. I've seen this in most often.
Or sometimes people leave and take positions in other universities. That's happened before, where all of a sudden somebody's not here and those have to get reassigned. And again, but the procedure for this is really fairly easy to do. You can just generally do this by email.
I want to add to that, you know, every student situation is unique. A lot of times what students do, hey, we're not keeping you from talking to your colleagues. No one's saying don't talk to your colleagues. But what we're saying is don't let them be the final authority on your academic plan, okay?
Right.
We have your professors, we have the chairs of the area, you have myself, you have all these people who are here to help you. And so really, they need to be part of this conversation and utilize that. We're here to help you. We're here to help you in the process. If you do have questions about the process, certainly I will probably first thing say, did you listen to the podcast? That'll be the first thing. But I'm happy to help you walk through that. And again, I'll see you in January, February, right? so that we can do that. Now, is there anything else you guys wanted to add before we close today?
Just to say something I said before, one more time, don't do this at the last minute.
Yeah.
Come talk to us in January. There's no need to wait.
Yeah.
Yes.
And let me just add one more thing in terms of communication that I alluded to before, and that is, I think it's always best once your committee is set, once you get into that second year, any communications that you have that are sort of committee relevant, communicate with everyone, as opposed to communicating with individual faculty members. Now, of course, if you're talking about like looking at a proposal and you want to meet with somebody individually, you're going to communicate with individuals. But in terms of down the road, and I'm guessing there's going to be a future podcast on this at some point, about doing sort of proposals and preparing defenses and things like this, again, I want to stress, I think it's always better to communicate with the committee as a whole unit rather than trying to go from one individual faculty member for another. Because this way, if there are differences, if there are things that maybe members of the committee don't agree on, we can sort of have those conversations and not have to be playing a game of telephone or email, right, in this case,
yeah,
where one person says something filters through another person to another person. Have the conversations with the committee as a whole as much as is possible.
And it's faster that way, too.
And it's also much
faster.
Because
then four people read your work at the same time instead,
yeah,
of doing one at a time.
Yeah.
And I think when you say what not to do, you don't want to show bet at your defense, and that's the first time you have to really talk to your committee, right?
If you have to introduce yourself to a member of your committee at your defense, that's a problem.
Yes, yes, yes. So, again, plan ahead. I think that's the theme for today. So, well, thank you so much for joining me on this, and I think it will be really helpful to our students. Also, to the listeners, we appreciate your feedback on the podcast. We know you're listening and are open to hearing if you have a subject you'd like us to cover. You can send your ideas to me and comments to my email. You know I'm in Music Practice Building 216 or my email. So, again, thank you for listening, and until next time.